It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn winter sun strategies, how to treat itchy, dry skin, decipher UVA and UVB rays, and what SPF is appropriate for winter coverage. A dermatologist is fielding all your skincare questions. The number to join in is 800-642-1234. Email your skin-related questions and comments to ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Olushola Akinchimoyen-Vaughn is a dermatologist with the Froedtert and Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network. She's an assistant professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Vaughn, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thanks for having me, Kate. I'm really happy to be here.
We have such fluctuations in temperature in the winter with the elements. You could be 30 degrees one day, 20 below the next. How do these temperature swings affect the skin?
Yeah, that's a really good point. The swings make it a lot more difficult to know what to expect, and different things then are happening in the skin. You know, heaters come on and that makes the skin really dry. When it's colder, people start taking these long hot showers and skin doesn't really like that. And so, you know, we do see that as it gets colder and the air gets drier, less humidity in the air, then the skin barrier gets disrupted. And so we see more skin conditions like eczema or atopic dermatitis, and like other kinds of dermatitis, just there's a kind called asteatotic dermatitis that just is from just being so dry that the skin gets inflamed.
We're going to talk about eczema in just a moment. But, you know, when you're trying to navigate sunscreen in the winter months, what is best, or what should we think about?
Good point. I think there's a myth that we don't need sunscreen in the winter because, you know, the sun doesn't seem like it's out very much. But that's a myth. Sunscreen is a year-round process. I do think that, you know, the data is a little bit mixed on, you know, how much sunscreen you need during the winter and how much UV is really impacting the skin during the winter, because those rays are, you know, quote unquote, indirect. And then there's also data on vitamin D. And some people think that, you know, the winter is a good time to take a break from sunscreen so you can get more vitamin D in the skin, because we know that most people that live in Wisconsin are vitamin D deficient, at least a little low. I think that it's better to get vitamin D from a supplement, because the skin cancer risk, you know, I see the worst skin cancer, so I'm totally biased, but I think it's a safer way to get your vitamin D. And I do think that people should be wearing sunscreen in the winter. The good news is that because people are bundling up, there's less body surface area exposed to the sun. So you don't need to be putting on quite so much. It's really just your face, you know, your ears and the backs of your hands that are really even going to be out. And sometimes with gloves, not even the hands. So yes, wear sunscreen on your face every day in the winter. That is the best thing for your health.
How do you think about layering sunscreen, moisturizer, and then cosmetics? Can moisturizer and cosmetics do some double duty as sun protection in the winter?
Yes. So there's many foundations now that kind of are considered physical blockers. You know, they have kind of sun protective qualities to them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for me, I like for people to use a moisturizer that has SPF built in. And those are becoming really standard now. That wasn't necessarily the case, you know, a decade ago, but now, and almost any facial moisturizer that you get is going to have at least SPF 15. And while dermatologists tend to recommend SPF 30 or above, you know, 15 is better than zero. So I do think putting on your moisturizer with sunscreen every day is a good idea. The ones that I like are actually the ones that are tinted physical blockers. So tinted moisturizer or tinted sunscreen. That means that their primary ingredient is either zinc oxide or titanium dioxide. And those are the ones that, like, in the 70s made the lifeguards' noses white. because those ones, they protect not only better against like the wide spectrum of light, but that includes light from our light bulbs in office buildings, which we actually know can contribute to dark spots, especially in skin of color. So I am a fan of tinted sunscreens because it can protect against all kinds of light. And it doesn't, you know, now these days, putting it on doesn't make you so pasty. And then to answer your original question, Kate, sorry, I kind of wandered a little bit, but you can absolutely wear your cosmetics and your moisturizer. So, you know, I think that those kinds of things should be kind of fun experimentation and self-care. So, you know, for some people, they put on their moisturizer and then they wait for, you know, 20 minutes and then they put on the rest of their makeup. Or some people find a moisturizer that's kind of meant to go on over makeup. You know, there's so many combinations. There's so many, the beauty industry is such a huge billions and billions of dollar business that you can really find something to make a routine that works for you.
Talking about skincare in cold weather months with Dr. Shola Vaughn, a dermatologist at Froedtert and Medical College of Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. You mentioned the widespread and common deficit of vitamin D in the winter months in Wisconsin among people. What is bad about being vitamin D deficient?
Being so northern in latitude, we don't get as much direct sunlight. And vitamin D is absorbed through sunlight, and then it's kind of like processed through the kidneys. The sunlight is turned into vitamin D in our bodies. And you can get vitamin D from some nutritional sources, but it's hard to get all of your required vitamin D from diet. And so a lot of people that live in northern latitude, you know, including Scandinavia, you know, it's not just us, it's not just northern US, it's kind of everyone at equivalent northern latitudes, they tend to have lower vitamin D levels. And so there's been a lot of, you know, discussion back and forth in the literature about, you know, what does that vitamin D deficiency, quote unquote, what is it? What is the actual significance of it for people's daily lives? You know, does it mean that they are going to have worse health outcomes? Does it mean that they have less energy? Does it mean anything? And honestly, we're not entirely sure. For example, in dermatology, sometimes people are really itchy, you know, older adults, especially, can be very itchy. And, you know, then you start to look at all of their health factors and you say, well, look at all these older adults who live in Wisconsin. A lot of them have low vitamin D. Maybe the vitamin D is the culprit. And some of them, when you correct their vitamin D, like if they start taking a hefty supplement, they will get less itchy. Hmm. But is the vitamin D, was that the cause? We honestly still don't know. So for most people who are a little vitamin D deficient, they don't really need to supplement. It's probably not an issue, but you know, I take a vitamin D supplement and, you know, I think it's reasonable to do so.
Let's look at the kiddos in the winter for a moment and dry skin issues. I know mine, sometimes the chapped lips just come on and you see the redness almost up to the nose. And, you know, it does go away, but is there anything, any at-home treatments you can do to help them when they've got such dry skin on their face?
Yes, there is a condition called lip liquors dermatitis. And it makes it sound like the, you know, the person or the child is doing it to themselves, but it's not. It's just that, you know, you kind of can't help it, that skin starts to get dry, the skin barrier breaks down, it starts to get inflamed, and you lick it, you know, it's kind of this process starts. And then when you lick it, that makes it worse. And it starts on the lips. And then it kind of, like you described, spreads up and around. It's on the chin, it's on the nose. There are fixes for it. The most important thing is to put on a petroleum-based protective layer. So people will try chapsticks and Carmex and they'll wonder why those aren't working as well. I think the best things to put on are actually just plain straight Vaseline, something like Aquaphor, or for me, it's hydrocortisone 1% ointment, which you can buy over the counter. That's cortisone 10. And the reason that sometimes that works better is because it does have a little anti-inflammatory property. Be careful when you buy it that you don't get the cream. I don't think the cream works as well, but hydrocortisone 1% ointment on that lip liquor's dermatitis tends to do the trick.
I had heard that petroleum jelly would just seal in and not allow moisture in, but apparently you want that type of barrier?
Yes, that's so funny because that is, I forget that these myths kind of circulate and they just refuse to die. but yes, so, you know, the Vaseline acts as a protective barrier. So it's not, you know, it's not even so much that it's sealing the moisture in, but it's making sure that more moisture is not evacuated from the skin by our harsh elements. You know, when you think about, you walk outside and just that cold, bitter wind and what that's doing to the skin, you know, if you can just have a little layer to protect it so that more moisture isn't evaporating. And then it does also help to like seal some moisture in, which is what you want.
We get dermatologist-approved winter skincare tips from Dr. Shola Vaughn at Froedtert at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Colin, with your questions about skin issues, advice you want to share, perhaps about how you deal with your dry skin, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn how to better protect our body's largest organ, the skin, in these winter months with Dr. Shola Vaughn, dermatologist at the Froedtert and Medical College of Wisconsin Health Network. Let's go to the phones now with Jordan in Madison. Hi, Jordan. What's your question?
Yes, I was wondering if there's additional strategies that the doctor may have for treating and dealing with rosacea, other than the topical gels that I've received from my dermatologist.
Jordan, thank you. Rosacea, Dr. Vaughn.
Yeah, thank you for that question, Jordan. The thing that people sometimes forget about rosacea is that everybody has a different trigger. There's many things that can trigger rosacea. And I think the one thing that can really help you is to figure out what your triggers are and try to avoid them. So for some people, it's heat. For some people, it's sunlight. Others, it might be red wine, cinnamon, other spices. So figuring out, okay, what is my trigger and can I avoid it? That can sometimes do wonders for rosacea. The other thing is that rosacea has many different subtypes. And so I'm really happy to hear that you're working with a dermatologist, because you do want to know what kind of rosacea you have and you want to explore different kinds of treatments. The topical creams and gels that you are using are good treatments for certain subtypes, but not necessarily all of them. For example, the metronidazole gel, for example, is a really popular treatment for rosacea. And it works well for the bumps of rosacea, but not necessarily for the redness of rosacea. So it's kind of a complicated question with a complicated answer. I will say avoiding triggers and then gentle skincare are probably the two mainstays. So sometimes people that have rosacea are doing all kinds of stuff to try to get the redness to go away. So, you know, they're putting on like this kind of toner and this witch hazel and all kinds of products. And a lot of times skin does not like that. I found that for rosacea, often less is more.
Jordan, thank you so much for the call. Dean now in Stoughton, bringing up eczema. Dean, hi.
Oh, hi. Yeah, just, I've had this slight outbreak, a few years back, and it just gets to be sometimes a little bit worse, mostly elbows and knees, and then a couple other, a little up by the temple or something. And, the doc gives me a I still can't pronounce it, but Trimalone acetone or something, and then for the, if it breaks out worse, it's betamethasone 0.05, and sometimes it comes and goes. I don't want to use the other one, the stronger one, as little as possible.
Unless you have to, yes. I wonder, Dr. Vaughn, do you know what are the triggers for eczema?
There, again, so many triggers and different ones for different people. If I may just comment on the steroids, though, because I think that this is a really important kind of educational piece. People sometimes are afraid of using their steroids, and I hear this a lot. Like, I only use the betamethasone, as little as I possibly have to, and I use the least possible amount. And I don't think that we need to be afraid of steroids. I think that we need to use them judiciously. We need to use them wisely, but I don't think we need to be afraid. So if your doctor has given you a stronger ointment or cream to apply, then you should use it when things are flared, and you should use it. All the skin should have a good coating of medicine. Sometimes people are applying it so sparingly that by the time they kind of get to the end, there's nothing really left on their finger. They're really just rubbing the skin. There's no medicine there. And so not all the skin is actually getting medicine on it. So don't be afraid to use enough. You don't want it to be, caked on like frosting, but you want to use enough that all of the skin that is affected is getting a layer of medicine. And then use the stronger one when the disease is more severe. That's what it's intended for. And in fact, if you're noticing that that's not doing enough, then it's reasonable to go back to your doctor and say, can you give me something even stronger than this? So that when I put it on, it will calm it down in a reasonable amount of time, you know, a week.
Do you like fragrance-free or sensitive skin products, laundry soap, does that help manage eczema?
Yes. So we know that I shouldn't say most, because I don't know the exact statistic, but many patients that have atopic dermatitis or eczema will also have, you know, skin sensitivity or allergic contact dermatitis. And so things like fragrances, people can get very allergic to them. And so we do recommend that people who have eczema use very gentle skincare. So things that are fragrance-free, things that are really bland, you know, soaps should not smell good. They shouldn't smell like flowers. They shouldn't smell, you know, like babies. The soaps should smell kind of bland. They should be, I like a bar soap, not anything in a pump. Because anytime you have a soap that's a liquid or a pump, it has to have certain preservatives in it to keep it from growing bacteria. And people with eczema can also get sensitive to those preservatives. So, you know, practicing really gentle skincare with a good bland bar soap and then a good moisturizer after you get out of the shower or bath.
Talking about ways to treat skin conditions with Dr. Shola Vaughn, dermatologist at Freidert. And let's go to Lynn now in Milwaukee. Lynn, you're on with a doctor.
Hi, Dr. Vaughn, and thank you for taking my call. I have vitiligo, so in spaces on my skin, I have no pigment, and it's real white, and I know that it's real sun sensitive. So I was wondering what I should do for that during winter.
Good question. Vitiligo is a condition where the melanocytes, the pigment-producing cells in the skin, are getting attacked by your own immune system. It's an autoimmune condition. And people have become more familiar with it over the last several years, especially because Michael Jackson had vitiligo, and that's kind of part of the reason why his skin kept getting lighter and lighter. And I actually just heard that Lego released their first vitiligo minifig recently. So, you know, now, I mean, vitiligo is like, you know, now it's a thing.
They've arrived.
They have arrived. And I think this is really good because, you know, for me, vitiligo is really, you know, important because I take care of a lot of skin of color patients, and it can be especially cosmetically impactful for people who have darker background skin to have these areas with no pigment, you know, like it was for Michael Jackson. You know, it can be very impactful. But even for anyone with vitiligo, lighter background skin or not, it's important to know that that skin has no protection against sun. So the melanocytes in the skin are intended to protect us from harsh UV rays. So that's why people that live nearer to the equator have darker skin tones. They needed more melanin. And when you start losing those melanocytes and that pigment in the skin, now you have no protection. So we do know that that skin that is affected by vitiligo, as you move forward through your life, it has a much higher risk of developing skin cancer within it. So if you have vitiligo, you must be protecting that skin from the sun daily. And especially in the summer, being very strict. You know, I know people who, if they have vitiligo on the hands, they wear driving gloves. They never let the sun touch that skin because they're really trying to mitigate their risk of getting skin cancer in those locations. That skin is really easy to burn, and it's really easy for it to acquire mutations and not be healthy.
I wonder, does it reverse at all or go away?
It can be treated. So in a small subset of patients, vitiligo can go away on its own. That is rather rare, but it can also be treated. So if you have vitiligo, I would see your primary care doctor or a dermatologist to talk about what treatments are options for you, because we do have a lot of treatments for it now, actually, and even new treatments that are coming out all the time, one that was just recently approved. So, you know, thinking about prescription ointments that you can put on the skin, thinking about phototherapy, even maybe oral pills that you could take. We have more options now than we had 10 years ago. So even if you've had vitiligo for a long time, it might be time to check in with your doctor again.
Also, you know, people do want to be out in the sun, you know, in the winter, just kind of feeling those rays, even in the cold temperatures. You know, if you have appropriate protection, is that okay? I mean, can you stay out for long times? I mean, even like in skiing or other types of sports?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, my goodness, we all need you know, the winter doldrums are a real thing. Like seasonal yes. affective disorder is a real thing. And we do, at this part of February gets me every year. Every year I'm like, I know it's coming, but I forget how just angry I get at the end of February that I'm like, come on, winter. Okay, give it up. It's been long enough now. And we all need to be outside enjoying nature and enjoying the feel of sunlight. I mean, that's just human. And so it's just that we need to protect that skin. You know, you mentioned skiing, and that's a place where people a lot of times forget to wear their sunscreen. You know, you're getting sun. Oh, go ahead.
We just need to pause right there. Milwaukee dermatologist Shola Vaughn, our guide, and we'll pick this up. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss how to care for winter skin, and let's hear from you. Call in about aspects of skin health like moles, skin cancer, your morning skin routine you wonder about, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Shola Vaughn is a dermatologist at Froedtert and an assistant professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Let's bring in Rob in Milwaukee. Rob, you're packing for a sunny trip, I understand.
Yeah, my wife and I are going to Cozumel on Monday, and we were just talking about sunscreen, and we bought our Reef Safe sunscreen, and talking about not trying to get too burnt, which is always a concern, but it's inevitable you're going to get some tan. What's the doctor's advice on just a general way to ease into that shock from going from cold, dry skin to the moist, sunny skin we're going to have down there?
That it's an interesting assumption that you're absolutely going to get tan, that you can't help it. I don't know if I believe that. You know, I think that if you are very good about applying sunscreen and it is the right amount of SPF, and if you reapply it every couple of hours, I think that you can avoid getting a tan. And remember that a tan, you know, we used to think tans were so good looking. A tan is a sign of damage to the skin. And, you know, as you know, my father is from Ghana, West Africa. And so, you know, he would tan very easily and he never wore sunscreen a day in his life. And it's hard for me now to look back and say, was that all just damage? That was, he was hurting his skin every time he got in the sun and got a little darker. But now that I know the science behind it, yes, that is, you know, all of that means that UV radiation has gotten to the skin and been able to activate those melanocytes. So that is damage to the skin. And remember that there's different kinds of UV. So there's UVA and there's UVB. People, to help remember, think of UVA as the aging rays and UVB as the burning rays. And so when you see that tan and when you try to avoid that burn, you're really focused on the UVB, but they come together. The sun is emitting both of them at the same time. So what you're not seeing is the UVA, the damage, and that is what is more of the culprit in skin cancer. So just because you're not tanning or burning doesn't mean that you haven't gotten enough UVA to cause a skin cancer. So while I really wish you a wonderful trip, Cozumel sounds amazing. I wish I were in a sunny, warm place myself today. But I do want to encourage you to think about having fun in the shade, avoiding, you know, those high peak sun hours, usually between 10 and 2, applying sunscreen with a high SPF, you know, 30 to 50, even more. And reapplying it every couple of hours, because you don't need to get that tan.
Can we talk a moment about skin cancer and how much of like skin melanoma cancer is preventable?
That's a good question. I don't know the statistics. I do know that protecting your skin from sun has more effect on keratinocyte cancers, so squamous cell cancer, basal cell cancer. We, as you know, just humans in our human behavior, have more control over that than we do melanoma itself. Melanoma is kind of a sneaker. It can arise on the inside of a lip. It can come on the genital skin. It can be in places that have never seen the sun. Mm-hmm. You can get a very bad melanoma in a young woman. It doesn't behave like other skin cancers. And so we don't have as much control over that, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't try, because we do know that protecting your skin from the sun, avoiding tanning beds, we know that that can reduce your risk of melanoma too. So we should be doing all of those behaviors.
I guess I don't have a really clear understanding the difference between a basal cell or a squamous cell cancers versus melanoma.
So, you know, the most common skin cancer in the country is basal cell cancer.
Okay.
And this, so there's three major types of skin cancer in America that we really think about. And they're kind of like, you know, those old aerobic shows where they'd have like a low, medium, and high intensity person. These three are kind of like that. So like the basal cell is kind of like the low intensity. Like if you get a basal cell, you know, usually you can cut it out. It's a surgery. You don't need to have any additional treatment. You need monitoring, but you're kind of done with it. And it's low risk. They don't tend to spread to the rest of the body. And then the medium intensity is squamous cell cancer. And that you can sometimes just cut out and be done with it. Some squamous cell cancers are actually so superficial that you can even use a cream to treat them. But some squamous cell cancers can spread to the rest of the body. And some people can even die of metastatic squamous cell cancer. So that one can be relatively harmless, can be relatively serious. And then finally, we have melanoma. And that's kind of the high intensity one. Some melanomas are very superficial, but you still kind of want to be monitored for life after you've had a melanoma. And then some melanomas are, they're very aggressive. They you think that they're gone, they come back 10 years later in your lung. You know, they can just act, they can be sneaky and almost scary sometimes. Melanomas can be really bad actors. And melanomas are have a higher risk of spreading to the rest of the body, and they can have genetic components too. So you can, you know, if you have a strong family history of melanoma, that impacts you more. Whereas if your parents have had lots of basal cell cancers, that doesn't necessarily impact your health. What you've inherited from them is probably a lighter complexion, and maybe some sun behaviors that you didn't do as a child because that wasn't in their behaviors, but you don't necessarily inherit the tendency to make those two other milder kinds of cancers. So, you know, this is a very, sorry, I'm getting a little detailed here.
No,
but
that's good. I will never, yeah, I will never forget your analogy ever again. I mean, it really helps. So I appreciate that. We're talking with Dr. Shola Vaughn, dermatologist at Freidert, as we talk about treating skin conditions and elevating your questions. Call in at 800-642-1234. Barbara is joining us from Florida. Barbara, what's on your mind?
First of all, thank you, doctor, for explaining the different basal cells to the melanoma. My husband, while we're down here, was just diagnosed with a melanoma that we're getting treated. But my question is, I'm a 76-year-old who was diagnosed by my dermatologist with psoriasis on my scalp a few years ago. He gave me some liquid steroid to use on the scalp, and I only use it when it's really bad. But he didn't counsel me much. So I'm wondering, can I affect how bad it is by my diet, by using hair dyes, being in or out of the sun here in Florida? And to treat it, should I use shampoos that I have by a dandruff shampoo or a coal tar? Would any of those help me out?
Barbara, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Barbara, for that question. The psoriasis is one of the most common skin conditions in America. And scalp psoriasis is notoriously difficult to treat because, you know, you're dealing with hair follicles and hair. And we do think that maybe the mechanisms of psoriasis on the scalp are a little more difficult. You raise a lot of really important questions. One of them is, can you affect your psoriasis through diet? And I get this question a lot, not just for psoriasis, but really for any skin condition or especially autoimmune conditions. And the answer is that the jury is really out on that. The one thing that I am a believer in, even though, you know, I don't see the studies to necessarily support it, is sugar. So I believe that sugar can raise inflammation in the body, and psoriasis is an inflammatory condition. So if you decrease your sugar intake, you probably help things like acne, like psoriasis, like eczema. Now, have there been randomized controlled trials to prove that? No. And as a doctor, it's easy for me to say, eat less sugar. Like, I'm never going to hurt anybody by giving that advice. So I like to give that advice to people. But as far as things like dairy or, you know, sometimes people will have, you know, other random things that I'm not even sure where they got. But the most common one I see is dairy or gluten. You know, I haven't, for psoriasis, no, I'm not a believer in that yet. I'll believe it when I see the studies.
What about,
and then,
I'm sorry,
no,
I interrupted you. What about the issue with hair dyes? I know Barbara just raised that. Any issues there?
No, I don't think so. As long as you work with a hairdresser who knows to use gentle products, and as long as you don't have an allergy to the hair dyes. So people do get allergic to their hair dyes. So pay attention. If you go and get your hair dyed and then about 2 to 3 weeks later, everything kind of flares up, that might be a sign. It's allergic contact dermatitis is tricky because it doesn't happen right away. And I always joke that that's why I have a job. If it were obvious that the thing that you put on your skin immediately the next day caused an allergy, everybody would be able to figure it out. But because it takes a few weeks sometimes, you've forgotten. Like if, you know, if I said to you, Kate, like, what did you do 3 weeks ago today? Without looking at your phone, you'd have no idea, right? So much less like what things touched your skin 3 weeks ago. You have no idea.
No.
So that's why allergic contact dermatitis is difficult. So look for trends. If you're using hair dye and then you're getting a flare a few weeks later, then obviously stop that.
So I want to turn to skincare products for a moment because this is a real booming industry. There's really high inflation. Budgets are stretched really thin. Is there... And, you know, especially like anti-aging creams you see, they're so expensive and these retinol products. What can we let go of to save money but still protect our skin?
Oh, gosh. Kate, this is, you know, like there's going to be 8 industry people sending me hateful emails if I say too much here. So I have to be careful. It is a booming industry. There's a lot of, I will say there's a lot of snake oil out there. And it is hard for a normal person, a consumer walking through the aisle at Target to know what is worth spending money on.
Mm-hmm.
The places that I will say I see people waste their money are on eye creams. So I'm sorry to all the people that love their eye creams, but if you have dark circles under the eyes and you are spending, you know, $20 to $30 for like an eye cream, that's probably not doing much. The eye creams that do work tend to be much more expensive. And then even then, at those the really bad under eye circles, I'm not sure that they're doing much for them. The products that I do like, I like hyaluronic acid that is drawing moisture into the skin. So I'm a believer in that. And there's a lot of products out there that I do think are working. Things like kojic acid, glycolic acid. I do think that they help skin. But you know, the brand that you're using makes a difference. If it's a brand that's not really regulated in the US, you know, if it's, you might not be getting what's on the label. And so watch for that. And then finally, retinoids, I think are helpful. It is, more useful to have a tretinoin, a vitamin A derivative that's prescription, or the one that you can buy over the counter is called Adapalene, or Differin is the trade name of that gel. I think that those work better. They are retinoids. I think they work better than retinol and retinaldehydes that you buy over the counter. And so this is difficult. If you really have concerns about skin quality, there are a lot of cosmetic practices, dermatologists who sell these kind of products in a clinic that also performs cosmetic treatments like laser, and you could go and talk to them about your skin.
Is there any way to treat those dark circles then?
So the best thing, so sleep, hydration, and then if you really want to get rid of bad under eye circles, usually it's filler that you have to put under the eyes.
Frieder, dermatologist and Medical College of Wisconsin faculty, Dr. Sholavan with us on skin damage, skin aging, issues that come up with skincare in the winter months. She's covering it all. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Skin is the organ we wear, so to speak. Let's pick up our conversation about caring for our skin in winter months with Frieder dermatologist Sholavan at our side. Going to John in Milwaukee now. John, hi.
Hi, and thank you. I had my original question was about light bulbs in the home. There are reading lamps, and It was mentioned previously about office lights, but a person who sits close to reading lamps, and there are different kinds of light bulbs, I wonder if they have any effect or a possible damage to the skin. That was my first question. And the other add-on, I guess you might say, is my mother had melanoma starting at the, on the scalp, and women, gals, have a lot of hair, but the sun can affect the top of the scalp, and if that's not examined periodically, it can be a source of damage. I thought I'd mention that also.
John, thank you. Let's go to Dr. Vaughn.
So the light question, the data that we have is that light, if the thing that it's most associated with that we're noticing now is dark spots and skin conditions that relate to melanin being dysregulated. As far as a skin cancer risk from internal lights, you know, that's rather low. Those lights are not really emitting enough UV radiation to cause trouble. But what they can do is, you know, worsen certain skin conditions. And then, you know, there's all, you know, there's like the blue light glasses now and things. We're learning more about light and its effects on human living. But I wouldn't say from a skin cancer perspective, I think your reading light is probably fine. And then I really appreciate you bringing up that point about melanoma on the top of the head. As we age, the hair is getting thinner on most people's scalps, and, you know, men often more than women, but women too. And that hair is really there as a protection against many things, but including sunlight. And so when you start to lose that hair, you are getting more sun than your body was built to handle on the scalp. And that can predispose you to sun-induced cancers there. And so if you are not paying attention, you could miss one and it could be diagnosed later. So, you know, feel for lumps, bumps, rough spots on the scalp. You also get a lot of harmless bumps on the scalp as you get older. So if you're not sure, you know, the things to watch for are a spot that's growing, bleeding, changing colors. And if you have a partner at home, you might be able to ask them if that spot is changing colors over a few months. But you can always work with your primary care doctor and say, well, look at this spot on my scalp, what do you think? And if they're not sure, they'll send you to a dermatologist. And if you have a dermatologist, they should, when they're doing their skin exam, they really should be looking through your scalp. They should be looking at all of your skin, and that includes genital skin, that includes skin under the underwear, private areas. So make sure that you are getting a proper screening.
John, thank you. Let's go to Ellen now in Sheboygan. Ellen, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. About 4 months ago, I got all sorts of splotches around my torso, and I went to the dermatologist. He did take a biopsy, thinking, you know, or ruling out things like lupus and a tick-borne, you know, issue. It came back negative. So wondering, 4 months later, it's still just big blotches. He said it eventually goes away. He said he thought it was morphia. Wondering what you know about that.
Huh. Thank you. This is a puzzler, because something's not quite adding up here to me. Morphia will not kind of just like eventually go away. Morphia is something that should be treated. You know, a lot of times when people have splotches and the biopsy doesn't show much, sometimes that's hives like urticaria. And, you know, sometimes it can just be physiologic flushing. So, for example, a person who is maybe perimenopausal might have, you know, hot flushes. And so the skin can kind of flush. Some people even get flushed, you know, if they have to stand in front of a room of people and give a talk, they'll flush. And that's, you know, not bad. But if you're talking about splotches on the abdomen that have lasted 4 months that were so noticeable that someone did a biopsy and they called it morphia, that should be treated.
Ellen, thank you so much. Does that help?
Yes. Just wondering who would I see after seeing a dermatologist?
Well, okay, I'm gonna, you know, again, I'm biased here, but I do think that the Frater and Medical College of Wisconsin dermatologists are the best. I think we have care, you know, we have experts in so many areas, you know, infections, psoriasis, pigmented disorders. I do a vulvar clinic, which is the female genital skin. You know, there are such great dermatologists at Frederick. And if you feel like you have something that requires a little bit more of an academic lean, then, you know, like something that's like a little bit more of a puzzle or a cognitive challenge, then I would come to Frederick.
Lori from Mount Horeb called in and wants to know if collagen powders help the skin and nails.
Great question. These were not such a thing when I was, you know, a younger trainee, but now they are everywhere. And so I do get this question quite a bit. I have seen studies where they give people collagen powders, they biopsy the skin before, and then they give them collagen powders for a few months, biopsy the skin again later, and you can see the difference in the skin under the microscope. So I believe that it is doing something, but whether or not that actually translates to change that you can see with the naked eye, that I'm not so sure about. And even if it does, how much money do you have to spend on those powders in order to get those changes that would be visible to the naked eye? And is that worth it to you? Now, if you have unlimited funds, then yeah, great. I mean, it's probably not hurting anything, but if, you know, inflation's high, money's tight, and something's gotta go, you know, the collagen powders can probably go.
Another question here, does waxing damage the skin, like waxing eyebrows?
Yes, so I do think that it is a little bit of a rough exfoliant to the skin. I haven't seen people who have chronic skin diseases because of waxing, but I do think that in general, you want to be gentle with your skin. It's the biggest organ. It is the only skin you're ever going to have. Treat it gently.
Finally here, hydration in our final moments. How does staying hydrated improve skin health at all? Do we know?
Yes. Do we know? I'm trying to think if I've seen actual papers. I don't know that I have, but just even from like the most basic fundamental science, yes, you need hydration. The skin makes natural moisturizing factors, and the skin creates a barrier against the outside world, against all these bacteria and viruses and fungus that are always trying to attack. And so if you do not have good hydration in the skin, if your skin is too dry, that barrier breaks down and you're at higher risk of infections and other problems. So staying well hydrated is so important, especially in the winter.
Dr. Vaughn, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Olushola Akinsimoran Vaughn is a dermatologist at Frederick and an assistant professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. For disclosure, Frederick and the Medical College of Wisconsin, they are business sponsors of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.